there's no not to say that.
Like, I tried.
But I learned what occurred today.
So.
I set it up and I have a point.
He's like, I say like 3 days.
Such an annual thing.
I was wrong. I wasn't yet there.
Okay.
We basically have three.
Yeah, I have not heard. Mark's not here. The other two, I have not heard anything, so.
Wait another minute or two.
I was a community outreach specialist for the Kenosha News, so I was involved in the community quite a bit, but never in the tobacco. I thought there was bigger problems that I needed to tackle, you know, opioid crisis and all of these things. Well, if you kind of digest down a little bit and you go to the very tiniest first step that the youth are taking to become these bigger, more known issues, it's tobacco. That's their first opportunity. So I had the opportunity to take on this role, and I'm excited. I did actually listen to a presentation of you guys in 2017 by Jacqueline Siraki, who had a presentation before me, and I was happy and sad at the same time. I'm sad because absolutely nothing has changed. In fact, it's gotten a lot worse. I'm happy because there is still movement, there is still action being taken. As you can see, I gave you guys handouts for the high school and middle school snapshots. There's 154% increase in high school e-cigarette usage in the past year. This is self-reported, so I would tend to say that the numbers might actually be higher. Youth are sometimes apprehensive to actually report their usage for fear of repercussions in some way. So looking at this data, we were doing a great job. Conventional cigarettes were going down and down and down, and suddenly we kind of forgot about this other issue that was creeping up behind us. So middle school, you're looking at a 272% increase in e-cigarette usage. I'm going to go out at the end of the presentation a little bit backwards, and I'm going to talk about the FDA regulations and what's being done at a national level, but I kind of want to pinpoint some of the achievements and things that we've done in 2018 on a local level. Now, mind you, again, I was just appointed in February, so I've only been doing this a few months, and I was taking over a coalition that was pretty much flatlined. It was dead. There was no action that had been happening in the prior year, at least, so all of the members just kind of dissipated out, and I'm starting from scratch. New technologies. This is what the youth are dealing with. This is what was confiscated from one high school in 2-week period in Kenosha County. So I don't know if you guys want to take a look at this stuff, if you've seen this. These are Juuls and Sorens. So teachers don't know what their youth have in their hands. They look like USB ports, just like you have a couple things plugged into yours. There's a Juul. These are Sorens. They're easily palmed, so teachers hide them pretty quickly. You can hide them from teachers. It looks just like anything. It looks like a pointer. It looks like anything. And they hide it. The achievements. The vaping ordinance. I passed that out. Holly Kangas and Dominic Ruffalo championed the city of Kenosha vaping ordinance update in March. What that did was incorporate into 101.123, which is the statewide smoking, the clean air law. It added vaping to that, which the state law specifically excluded. So in the city of Kenosha now, anywhere you are not able to smoke, you are now no longer able to vape. Additionally, vape shops can't sell and youth cannot possess items that may be used to aerosolize nicotine. So the Soren is sold with no nicotine in it, so technically there would be no age restriction to the sale of this item to a youth because it's just a device. There's nothing in it that is illegal. FDA has said nicotine products must be sold to 18 and older, but this is empty. What this ordinance did was made the sale of this or the possession of this device illegal. So that opened up the SROs, the school resource officers, to take action then. When they're collecting these items before, it was up to the schools to mandate and enforce their school policies because all the youth had to say was, there's no nicotine in here. When in fact, it does contain nicotine and there's no way for the to test that and know. So additionally, devices that are empty are also illegal now for them to possess. The problem is it's only in the city of Kenosha. So we have a lot of other municipalities in the county of Kenosha that have no ordinances on the books right now, and it doesn't seem like the county is moving forward with anything yet as that pertains to e-cigarettes. What we're doing to try to help push that along. We have legislator meetings where we meet with the legislators. Just this year we had a budget year, as you all know. So we met with some of those people that had some input on the budget. Todd Onstead, Tyler August is in leadership. He has a small portion of the northern part or the western part of Kenosha County. And we're just trying to get them education, give them the snapshot, show them that this really is a big deal still in Kenosha. The word tobacco, people think it's gone, it's done. You know, nobody's chewing, nobody's smoking, but e-cigarettes are a tobacco product. It's an OTP. Reaching our community. I have now reformed two FACT groups. FACT is the peer-to-peer advocacy groups that take place from 7th through 12th grade. I have positioned us to have one at the Boys and Girls Club, which will start this summer with their programming. So we'll have access to disparate affected youth through the Boys and Girls Club at least through September. Hopefully that continues on, but with school changes and when their programming changes, we'll have to see. However, in September, I do have a group formed at Indian Trail. So Indian Trail is our largest population school in the city of Kenosha with 2,400 students. So they will have a fact group forming in September, and I'm hoping to be able to recruit at least 6 to 10 youth to be the founding members. And then it'll grow from there through factivisms. Factivisms are these little activities that the kids do, which teaches other youth about tobacco products. Education to school administrators and teachers. I did 4 presentations at the ESC building in March to middle school and high school counselors, principals, guidance people, just trying to get them this information. We have in-depth presentations about the impacts of nicotine on the brain, how that leads and teaches the brain addiction further on down the road. And more often than not, the teachers are just so impressed and they want to see these products because it's not often they go hang out at vape shops or at, you know, convenience stores to see this stuff and to smell it and to actually see, like, the world says this is only marketed to adults, and I don't know any self-respecting adult that's buying gummy rainbow sour mixed fruit e-juice. But it's there, and it smells great. So we're working on educating our schools. I did 4 presentations in February at the ESC building. I had 7 classes at a Waterford High School. All day long, every group of teachers came in one period at a time and got the same presentation, and then they invited me back to do health class teaching. So I did another full day of 7 classes of presentations to the youth, and really just kind of explaining to them my personal opinion. We've done a great job at teaching our youth the silos. We taught them why tobacco is bad. We taught them why methamphetamines are bad. We taught them why not to share their pills. We taught them the opioids are bad, but we've never really kind of put it all back together with this is all falling under the umbrella of an addiction crisis that we have, not necessarily an opioid crisis or a methamphetamine. It's going to be something new in 6 months, whatever direction it goes. But ultimately, all of these things are an addiction crisis, and nicotine is priming their brains while it's still being developed. So that is the focus of those presentations. I had a presentation during KUSD's Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Awareness Week. It was Thursday night at Bradford High School. It should have attracted a lot of attention. These mailers went out to all of the parents. We boosted it on social media. Word of mouth, we told all the counselors about it. We had a whole 20 parents show up, and we thought that was just kind of low. But then they're all outraged once they hear the presentation, and they want to know what else they can do. And so it's really a matter of getting this information out to the parents and letting them know that this education is available. And it's pertinent. Media outreach, I have a pretty good in because I was the community outreach specialist for the Kenosha News. So when I left, I still have all of those ties. So we're doing a really great job with promoting a lot of the new statewide initiatives like the Tobacco is Changing program. I'm writing columns, I'm submitting letters to the editor, and they're all being published nicely. Wisconsin Wins. So under my program, I also facilitate the Wisconsin Wins program, which is the retailer tobacco checks. In 2018, there was a full year contract period with the state, and there was 80 inspections. They had 0 sales. This year, there was a 1 weird 6-month contract period, so that's why we have less inspections in 2019. There was only 34. However, there was 6 sales in the 34 inspections. So we are going the wrong way with the retailer education. Beginning in July 1st through June 30th, we have another full year contract. So again, we'll be doing 120 inspections, I believe, this upcoming year. And hopefully our numbers are getting better. But I think the change isn't necessarily related to the retailers specifically. It's the products that are available that the retailers maybe just don't know that. And they're so much easier for you to access. This is what my kids bought last weekend. 2 weekends ago, actually, only 1 was a Juul, all of the rest were cigarillos. So these are pretty obvious tobacco products, so it's a shame that that's happening, but this is everything they were able to purchase. Partnerships. We're working on now, I am trying to regain the partnerships that have kind of fizzled off. I've started with the WALFODAC, which is the Walworth County Drug Abuse Coalition. I've been working with the Aurora Public Health Nurses when I'm doing my presentations at all of the health resource fairs. The Walworth County Health Department has been very active in inviting us in to do presentations to legislators or when they have public nights or information nights to us to do presentations. Join the Movement is an anti-human trafficking movement. There's a few of them. We now have a lady based right in the Kenosha area who is the head of these three counties also, so I'm working with her. Kenosha County Sheriff David Beth has been wonderfully supportive. Sheriff, I forget the Walworth County name, but he is also very supportive and active, and the Kenosha Landlord Association. We have the Clear Gains Program, which is the smoke-free housing. And when that kind of went through in our community, we're now trying to revamp it and update it to include vaping as well. They're also kind of looking ahead and adding marijuana language in case that ever becomes approved, because they realize it's easier just to do it now once than do it twice. So working with them. The FDA timeline. People ask me this question all the time. Why, what's going on with regulations for these products? Well, in 2009, President Obama signed the Tobacco Control Act. Then in 2016, finally, the FDA set a deadline for these tobacco, these e-liquids and the devices themselves to be submitted for review by the FDA. They set that date as 2018, August. Then in 2017, they extended it to August 2022 and allowed them to continue the sale of these products while they are submitting. So they don't have to have anything submitted until August 2022. In the meantime, they are able to sell these products, which means there's no regulation in the wording that's on them, the ingredient listing, nothing. Nothing's tested. There's no regulation whatsoever on these products. So it took 13 years to regulate e-cigarettes from 2009 until finally 2022. I'm sure you've all heard a lot about like the Juul marketing towards youth, and that's kind of a side issue. That's just talking about marketing and where they can place their marketing. It's not talking about their actual products and any sort of review of them. So looking ahead, what we have going on next year. We'd like to start holding coalition meetings in all three counties, conducting skill-based trainings. That's trainings on how to do outreach. So I'm not the one doing all of the outreach, how to write letters to the editor, how to submit columns, conducting personal meetings with state leaders, and just one-on-one personal meetings. I would love for anybody who wants to sit down and talk about these products to feel free to email me. I'm happy to come talk with you, let you see the stuff, just give you more information, do a little deeper dive into these products. Continue the media outreach. Next year we have retail assessments. It's where we go into retail establishments and look at the products and the marketing and the placement and report back to the state with those findings. Assist in addressing the smoke-free air actions. That's updating all of the landlords' policies. Connect with other community groups. And this is a big one, working with the schools to update their policies. All of the schools have some sort of tobacco language, but it's very rare that they actually contain e-cigarette language or other tobacco products, device, just, you know, ones that may not necessarily contain nicotine on the shelf. So working with schools to update those policies is critical. I have 47 schools, though, school districts in my three counties, so it's a pretty big undertaking. Conducting presentations to schools and educators, restarting the fact groups, that was that peer-to-peer advocacy. We have 104 tobacco checks coming up in Kenosha County now between July 1st and June 30th. And then retailer education. That's when I go back out to any of the locations that did sell. I do go back out to those locations with education to the retailer. All of these locations that we do the checks on had received letters and that education from me about a month or two ago, so they did have it then, and it's just going back out once again and giving it to them. So that's it. Does anybody have any questions? Yes?
What are they finding as far as side effects with the carrier oil and all of this? What are they
That's saying? A good question. So, the number one ingredient in most of the e-juices is propylene glycol or vegetable glycerin. Now, propylene glycol is okay to eat in small amounts. It's used as a preservative. However, it's not okay to inhale it in large quantities. So with tobacco use and cigarette smoking, it took many years before the actual hard data came about, 20, 30 years before people started developing these cancers. They can tell you, though, that when the vape juices are actually sent to labs and the reports come back with the contaminants that are in them or the ingredients that are in them, often there, I have a list in my office. There's about 25 to 30 ingredients typically, and 9 of them are cancer-causing agents. So they're there. They're not listed on the package. And well, I guess we'll just see. Everybody that's using it now, unfortunately, is kind of the guinea pigs. Another big one is dicetyl. That's what causes the popcorn lung, and that's being found in most vape juices also. It gives them that smoother feel, buttery taste, buttery feel. It's in there. So until the FDA gets that, their packaging requirements, we won't know. But it is harmful. There is also science behind the secondhand vape. When you blow back out, I mean, there's no vapor in this. It's aerosolized nicotine. It's not hot enough to vaporize anything, these devices. So when you're blowing that back out, there is, I think, about a half of the chemicals that went in are coming right back out. So it's scary. And really the people that want the hard science, unfortunately, are willing to be the guinea pigs. They're the ones that we'll be writing about 20, 30 years from now. But you can deduce from the ingredients that are being shown in these that they're not good. Nothing good's gonna come out of this. Also, the oils, I did speak to an ER doctor that was telling me that he had a youth come in that had pneumonia and had to have his lungs pumped, and it was an oily substance that they were coming out of the lungs that had a tinge of color to it, and he assumes that's the e-liquid juices that they're vaping.
They're advertising it as a way to stop smoking.
Yeah, so Juul was designed in 2004 in China as just that. And even on their website, it says, this is a healthier alternative to smoking. I'm not gonna debate whether it's a healthy alternative to somebody who's been smoking and they wanna quit. I'm not a scientist, I don't know. But if it helps that person, it helps that person. The FDA has said this is not an approved cessation. However, my focus is on the initiation and youth of these. So, as an adult, you can make your own decisions about what you're gonna do. I'm looking out to protect our youth from, they don't know. It tastes delicious. It's the flavors that they're attracted to. It seems harmless. They're sharing vape pens. Unfortunately, the vape pens now are laced with THC. The THC, it's called DAB. It's an extractant of THC from marijuana plants, but when they do this extractant process, they're also getting the other drugs that are in that marijuana, which is often found with cocaine or fentanyl or small amounts of heroin to beef up that product. So when they're extracting it, it's going into that dab and it's going into their vape pens and they're inhaling it. So we have kids coming up positive for cocaine and fentanyl when they swear they've never used it. And we have to believe that it's probably from the illegal carts that are being sold, which contain the THC. Anything else?
All right, well, thank you. It looks like you've done a lot of work.
Yeah. We're trying.
I remember last time the lady came in and she said smoking was on the decrease,
right?
And we were like, what about e-cigarettes? And she was like, I don't know about
that. So I listened to that presentation and I was sad because I heard her say, the vaping's going down. And I'm like, what? When did that happen?
Have you seen anything? I mean,
they're not admitting to a lot of it.
All right. But you're not seeing any pulmonary issues? Or
I have not.
Nothing like that. That's
I will say we've been renting our house, our large house, and the last 2 years we've had college students in there. And we were very clear, you know, no smoking means no, I mean, you know, had college kids, I know exactly what all the words are. So we had it all in there, and then we went through and we explained in very detail why and what and whatever. Oh no, Scout's Honor, I'd never do this.
Because of college students.
Right. So a month later, I go through for the first inspection, and I walk into one kid's room, and I'm like, okay, well, first of all, I'm getting your security deposit because you've been vaping. How do you know? Look at the wall.
It's sticky.
And
it's
sticky, and if you've ever been in a bathroom where, like, the steam has, like, hit the ceiling, and then, you know how, like, on the paint, there's a little bit, well, you get that when you've got somebody doing a lot of vaping. And so, you know, he was like, you have a problem, young man. Would we like to talk about it? And how did you know? I see all and I know all.
I will leave a couple of my cards too. On the back there is some resources for parents. Tobacco is changing, and then the quit line. The Wisconsin quit line is available for youth, anybody 13 and older, or vaping also, and they can actually be prescribed free medication for 2 weeks if they qualify. So all good resources, and then I do have another handout sheet if anybody ever wants to email me for like text resources and apps that youth can download.
to help them quit, because it is the third most addictive drug, and they're getting it in super high quantities, and they're going to need help to get off of it. So, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Atifa, K-Life.
All right, let's get healthy family.
Hello, everyone. I'm Atifa Robinson. I'm the program coordinator for the Mental Health First Initiative for Health Plan, acronym K-Life. And I'm going to introduce you to.
And I'm Josie Garwood. I'm the K-Life intern this summer.
Okay,
let's get started. My Board of Health update today. Last year, when I took over K-Life, my predecessor, Pamela Smith, did the Board of Health update on sustainability. So my Board of Health presentation today will be about the next steps for life and what I've been doing during that no-cost extension and sustainability period. Okay. Our mission for K-Life, we have not altered that. It has still stayed the same. Our mission is still to eliminate the gaps in premature birth and low birth weight between black and white infants, and to address the underlying community conditions and social factors that lead to infant mortality. Our Kayla collaborative goals and objectives, those have changed. So the collaborative is working on improved health care and birth outcomes, reduce infant mortality rates and racial disparities, and we're address social condition and health equity. So as we move forward, our action plan has also changed. Our action plan is targeted to improve birth outcomes to reduce infant mortality, improve access to health care for mothers, fathers, and families to promote health equity. And then we're educating mothers, fathers, and families on recognizing health factors and symptoms for postpartum depression. Before I took over K-Life, one of the things that K-Life was focusing on was postpartum depression, and we were not able to educate the families on postpartum depression. So during the no-cost extension period, which is from April 1st until September of this year, we're really hitting it hard to focus to make sure we're getting those from early screenings, having a baseline, and then making sure we're screening after delivery. So next steps for life, Kenosha Life will focus on number 3. So if you have this form, number 3 of the Essentials of Public Health of Service, which is inform, educate, empower people about health issues. The collaborative and I sat down on the last meeting that we had 15 members that attend within the community, and we wanted to really talk about making sure we're doing those educational pieces, making sure we're informing families, because if they're not informed, then they're not educated, and then we want to teach them how to empower themselves and advocate for their health. Also, WPP, Wisconsin Partnership Program, there are funders for Kenosha Life, and they have a 5-year plan, so I also gave you guys information on that. And they have a 5-year plan that will lay out a floor plan of how to get to health equity. So their health equity, they have key values that they're working on: academic leadership, community voice, creativity, multi-sector partnerships, and sustainability. And in this pamphlet that you will go over and read, you will find out Kenosha Life Course Initiative is listed as one of the communities that they want to advance towards health equity. So to align with the goals of our funders, but also to align with the goals of Kenosha County Division of Health, we're working on number 3 from the Public Health Services, and then we're also going to work on advancing towards health equity. Success and impact segment. One of the things about K-Life, Nicole Linsky, she's from UW Extension. She was able to come to the Infant Health and Safety Fair last year and attended, and with the connection with K-Life, two successful program pilots were able to come out of that Infant Health and Safety Fair. They were able to create Eating Smart, Being Active series to educate people on nutrition, because that was something that we wanted to add to the Infant Health and Safety Fair. And then the other thing, they were able to launch Teen Cuisine with Melanie from Family First, which is from Professional Service Group, and they do mental health for children, so they want to make sure they also have healthy nutrition. And so those are some of the success and impact segment that we will be doing. Every year we will have a success and impact. K-Life data. One of the things in the past, we were not able to provide community-wide data. So one of the things we've been doing is gathering data from the community. Last year we had a chance to access and create a What's a Healthy Community GU essay contest through the schools. We talked to students from 4th to 8th grade. They submitted 246 essays, and the data that came from that, I did give you guys access to that as well. And so some of the top community assets that came out of that data from Lincoln Middle School, they talked about sports and exercise. All Saints, the South Campus, talked about safe communities. All Saints, the North Campus, talked about respecting and health equity. And then Wilson said their top asset is grocery stores. And so the top concerns that came out of, they said pollution and violence was a top concern for the community for Lincoln. Health concerns and disease was for All Saints South. Polluting and littering was for All Saints North. And lack of healthy foods was for Wilson Elementary. With this data, it helped to shape some information for life that we know that we need to do early identification in order to improve birth outcomes and to reduce infant mortality. And reading all 246 essays, the students talked about health equity, but they also talked about their community and not knowing what healthy really was for them. And so if we start early, we can improve birth outcomes. And with this data, we're going to use that to come up with a healthy plan to move towards health equity. Our K-Life calendar year from April 1st to September 20th, July 15th, we're going to be doing the diaper distribution collection. And every year K-Life does that at the Infant Health and Safety Fair. We pass out diapers to families in need. But we also supply our diaper closet, which is Racing Community Action Agency WIC, Prevention Service Network, which is PSN, and then the Home Visiting Nurse Program. And July 18th, we'll have the K-Life Health Equity Forum. On that forum, we have a panel that we're putting together, but we're also going to have a speaker from state of Wisconsin that is going to spend 30 minutes with us talking about health equity, what it looks like, and how we can engage individuals in the community. Then the panel members will come in, introduce themselves, and talk about how we can touch on the social determinants of health and work towards improving birth outcomes. Dr. Gerlach will be one of the panel members from Board of Health and representing Aurora as well to be that key expert on how we can improve birth outcomes in that area. We will have Dominique Pritchard, she'll be doing mental health. Sheriff David Beth will come in and talk about the DEAR program and how we can do early intervention as far as tobacco and alcohol use in safe neighborhoods. We'll have Juan Torres from KUSD, and then there's various others. Dr. Zapata will be our expert for infant mortality. So we'll be looking at maybe 10 to 12 panel members of experts that can basically guide us into 2020. The Infant Health and Safety Fair will be September 13, 2019, and we have changed the formats to not resource tables, but we will be doing an educational session. So each individual will be able to take 30 minutes, make it their own, but educate the community on what's necessary for access to health, because again, we want to make sure that families know the right resources and how to move things forward as far as prenatal care, safe sleep, and HUD and lead abatement. Lastly, we will end with How Do You Help Your Community video contest, September 13, 2019. And with that, we're going to engage the teams again, but we're going to ask them to, how do you help your community? And after they list all those the information, we will use that data to identify the gaps in services, because they're going to list some services that are not available, how they want to help their community, and how could they help their community. So those are our K-Life calendar for this year. And I skipped past our community outreach because for community outreach, what we generally do is I do 11 outreach events this year. In June, I'll be at the reunification visit because we want to make sure that we're showing families who are either in foster care. I've been asked by Donna Rhodes of DCFS how to help them improve birth comps and outcomes in that area. So I'll be at the reunification picnic. I'll also be at National Night Out again because we grabbed data last year from participating in that event. And then news and updates for life. We talked about life being revised for the 3 years. As everyone knows, that life was a 5-year program and it ended as of March 31st. We're actually in the no-cost extension period, which is April 1st to September 30th. And life decided, after all the engagement and some of the things that I participated in last year and the rebranding process that I did, they want to review and revise life for 3 years. June, coming up at the end of the month, we would know by WPP, the Wisconsin Partnership, if life would be renewed for 3 years. What I've been told, the model would look different. It would not be the same, but it would be more community impact and would be community driven. Okay. And then hashtag Take Action Outreach Plan. That is a plan that the collaborative had created. My predecessors had created before me, and they didn't know where to take the plan. The plan included a mental health navigator, but it also included an outreach coordinator. And so once I took over the position and we did not know the next step for life, we combined all three positions into mine. So now I am the project manager, but I'm also the outreach coordinator, but then I am the navigator. And so Take Action stands for ask what you want to know, care enough to do something, talk about it, initiate a plan, own it, and never give up. So at the WIC office, I am able to navigate women, fathers, and families to different resources. I'm happy to say we are able to navigate families through WIC mental health services. One person came to me, we was able to get them enrolled for 45 days in a mental health facility. One person was homeless, we was able to get them lined up with housing. Also WGU and Food Share and Medical Share. So we do take it very serious on that navigating piece and the warm handout. But the purpose of that outreach plan is to create and encourage families to advocate for their health. Because what I've learned that a lot of families just don't know where the resources are. And so if we can teach people to navigate, to navigate their own services, they'll be more willing to take their health serious. So for this, our hashtag Take Action, we want to really get out there and educate our community. So we decided to create a movie ad and to talk about postpartum depression and early screening. We'll be doing a 16-week billboard campaign as well. And then we're also working on a podcast. And so some of you guys from Board of Health might be asked to be on that podcast to give some important information. So we can make sure we're educating the community properly. So if Karen can push it.
Did you know 1 in 7 mothers experience postpartum depression? Did you know fathers experience it too? Everyone experiences it differently. So please talk to a loved one or a medical provider. And remember, you're not alone.
On your screen.
So we yeah, it's only on her screen.
Oh, it's okay. Sure, I can see it on her screen.
1 in 7 mothers experience
postpartum. This is our movie ad. It'll actually be actionable.
Please
talk to a loved one. So we get a sound.
Yes, as long as you can hear the sound, that's okay.
So go to Tinseltown, you'll actually see it.
Yes. That's okay. It's okay. And then lastly, at least, it goes to.
That's how we froze the slide.
It goes to Q. The last thing goes to Q&A. But the last thing I have for you is making sure you guys know that I am participating in training. As a project manager for K-Life, I've had the chance to go to Towards One in Milwaukee. And some of the things that I learned from Towards One, they gave us a social and economic strategy to improve health equity. And so this is one of the things I passed out to the collaborative members to let them know that if you have a strategic plan that you want to access, you can use this tool, and it'll give you some tips on some of the strategic plans that are out there. So I've been making sure that I've been going to equity training to make sure that I'm guiding the collaborative properly and making sure that we're advancing towards health equity. And so last is Q&A. Any questions?
Yes. You're talking about postpartum depression. Are you also mentioning postpartum anxiety?
Yes.
That tends to get, you know, as we're starting to talk more about PPD, mm-hmm. PPA is not always being brought up.
Correct. I looked at some information, and I referred mostly to a mental health provider to look over all the information before I pass it out. And PPA anxiety is something that comes up. But we do have a website that we go through that CPPD, mm-hmm. and it gives you all the information that you would need in handouts, how to talk to your doctor, how to talk to a loved one. It talks about the anxiety, you know, that postpartum is different for everyone, and that everyone will experience it different. We also educate on fathers having postpartum depression as well. And so I know that's a tough topic for some people, but we have also educated. We do that on our Facebook page as well, because at least 20% of the fathers will have postpartum depression. And so we want to make sure that, you know, healthcare providers are looking at fathers as well. And then the last thing, we're working on a mental health provider card. I've teamed up with the Home Visiting Program and some other individuals to look it over. So we're gonna have a mental health resource card. It's gonna have the providers, and it'd be for mothers and for fathers. And then we'll pass them out to make sure that Aurora, Fraser South, Kenosha County Health Center has it as well.
Great,
mm-hmm.
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to Sandy.
I'll talk quick. I have a lot of time. So my name is Sandy Light. I'm the team leader for the Family Planning and Reproductive Health, Kenosha Sexual Health Awareness Clinic. And then Samantha works with me, and also Kira Kraus, who is the program coordinator for the Well Woman Program. Yeah. Okay. Our goal is obviously to provide a community-based, I'll try not to talk too fast, clinic for quality, accessible, affordable, and confidential care for our clients. We're reaching out to some of the most vulnerable population in Kenosha County through our clinic. Our goal is to provide patient education and anticipatory guidance so that clients are making informed decisions about their reproductive life plans. And I see a typo in there, but we follow the Wisconsin DHS rule for the principles of operation for Medicaid certified clinics. Services that we provide, Well Woman's annual exam, her Well Woman exam. So we go through a health history, we review their immunizations, counseling about maintaining a healthy lifestyle, so we talk about nutrition, making sure that all women who are of childbearing age are taking a supplement with folic acid in it, because most of our young teens are not getting enough folic acid in their diet. We screen them for depression, screen for violence. We also do contraceptive counseling and provide contraceptives if they're interested in that. We try to enroll everyone in the Family Planning Only Services program that's put on by the state of Wisconsin, because we are a family planning services clinic, and counseling on how to avoid sexually transmitted infections and testing. Everyone who comes in the door is offered and encouraged to take condoms. We also provide contraception without exam, so they can do that by walk-in appointment, or they can walk in or schedule an appointment as well. And then we do pregnancy testing, and all women who come in with a positive pregnancy test, again, are given a bottle of prenatal vitamins, told where they can also obtain the vitamins for free. That's pretty much our family planning clinic. And then, just as an FYI, that the United States, in case you haven't heard, is experiencing a very significant increase in the number of sexually transmitted infections in the United States. And this just talks about a little bit about, in the United States, what type of increase we're seeing from 2013 to 2017. And also, whenever you're looking at this data, it's always a little bit behind. But for chlamydia infections, they've increased by 67% in the United States. Syphilis is up by 76%, and gonorrhea by 31%. We really thought that we had made a huge impact on syphilis, and now we are starting to see things like congenital syphilis occur again, which hadn't occurred in many years. So it's getting a little scary on that end. The other thing that we're concerned about throughout the United States and in the world is that gonorrhea is becoming resistant to the antibiotics that we currently have to treat it. So They're tracking that in the United States, and there have been, in Milwaukee County, in 2017, there were 6 cases of antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea, equally distributed between men and women. So this is what's going on in Kenosha. So between 2013 and 2017, kind of following the CDC information that was out there, gonorrhea has increased by 18%, and chlamydia has increased by 10%. 2018, the data that we looked at so far kind of looks like it's stabilizing. One of the concerns, or one of the issues, is we don't know, is this because more people are being tested, or is it because we have more disease? And there's no way that we can really define that data. So the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene, we're working with them in the next 6 months. Because of the significant increase in gonorrhea, we follow selective screening criteria, guidelines for who should get tested and who shouldn't get tested. And because of the increase in gonorrhea that we're seeing, they have made the decision that all clients under the age of 25 be tested for chlamydia and gonorrhea, irregardless of if they're having symptoms, if they're not having symptoms, so that we can kind of get a handle on what's going on in gonorrhea in the state of Wisconsin with the youth.
Down to what age?
14. So that program will go until October. So then the Kenosha Sexual Health Awareness Clinic, again, we believe that's an essential component of quality comprehensive family planning services. Obviously, people are infected with sexually transmitted infection and they're not aware of it. It can affect their ability to reproduce later in life and can cause some chronic long-term problems. So we want to increase their awareness, so we're really trying to do a lot of education with our clients about what their risk factors are, why they're at risk. A lot of young women don't understand that their cervix is not fully developed yet, and so they're at higher risk for acquiring infections, and so really trying to get them to be aware of what their risks are and also to use condoms. So just the same thing that we would do in any other visit. We're getting a history, we screen them and identify the risk factors, we talk about their sexual behaviors, we screen them for substance abuse, we screen them for alcohol, smoking, depression. We test them for all of these sexually transmitted infections. We treat them if they become positive or are positive. And then we also offer them anonymous notification of their partners, so they don't have to be the person who's telling their partner that they're positive for a sexually transmitted infection. We will do that anonymously for them. And then some of our clients have partners that will not be tested or treated or won't come in for treatment, and so I can offer them expedited partner therapy, so I can write a prescription for them to go to the pharmacy and go pick it up without having to come in and be sick. Some of the outreach services that we did last year or that we're involved in, so we have a memorandum of understanding with the Kenosha Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Program out of Aurora and with Women and Children's Horizons, and this is to provide comprehensive follow-up services for victims of sexual assault. And the reason we did this is we're trying, most individuals who are sexually assaulted, less than 10% of them will do follow-up services or receive follow-up care. And so the goal of this was to try and provide the service for victims who, A, didn't have a provider that they could go see, or B, were not comfortable going to their provider and talking about the sexual assault. One of the big things that we do for this is post-exposure prophylaxis for HIV protection. So if an individual is sexually assaulted and there's nothing known about the perpetrator and they feel that they've had an exposure or potential exposure for HIV, the emergency room physician is writing a 5-day prescription for the post-exposure prophylaxis, and they come and see me, and then I continue with the labs and the post-exposure prophylaxis up until day 28. We also go to the detention center and participate in the Living Free program, so we're giving education on disease prevention and health promotion to the males and females. We go there once a month. We talk about healthy living, contraception, addiction issues, and then sexually transmitted infections. And then on Wednesdays, we go to the detention center and offer STD testing for gonorrhea and chlamydia only for clients who are symptomatic or are requesting that testing. And then obviously, if they come back positive, they are treated. One of the things that we also got involved in this year was the One Key Question. It was a March of Dimes initiative, so we worked with CCS clients. So all of the caseworkers were educated on asking all of the individuals who are childbearing age, would you like to become pregnant in the next year? And then if they, depending on what their answer is, they would refer them to us for either contraception or talking about prenatal vitamins. And I think, it's a group of people that has kind of been forgotten in the contraceptive field, and so no one was really ever talking to them about how to protect themselves from pregnancy or even actually thinking about, do I want to get pregnant and what am I what am I going to do if I get pregnant, and how do I prevent myself from getting pregnant? So I think it was a really good educational program, and we're still continuing to get the referrals from them for their clients. And that's it. I was fast. Any questions?
I think you're going to get help for the next week.
Sorry, I'm trying to talk really fast.
No, that's okay.
So we click forward for backwards and backwards for
forward. Let's see. Next is Brianna.
So we have a video to play.
I don't know if it's going to play.
That might play and might not play. It's on the next slide. Oh, wait, do I do it?
Yeah.
But it's only coming up on yours.
Sorry,
you guys can't see that. So,
I was so scared.
Well, maybe we can stop it.
It was really difficult. Not having my mom, my dad.
It's not. Okay, so we could send it out. Yeah, it's on YouTube, actually. I have the link here. So it was just a summary about NFP. So NFP is an evidence-based community health program with over 40 years of evidence showing significant improvements in the health and lives of first-time moms and their children. At Kenosha County, we are participating in a multi-pilot as well. So we are able to also take on multi-parent moms anytime during their pregnancy. And then this started about a year ago, and we will continue this for another 2 years to see if we're able to achieve the same outcomes as with the first-time moms. So this is a little bit of the history of NFP, and I'll talk quick because I think I have a lot. So beginning in the early 1970s, Dr. Olds initiated the development of the nurse home visiting program. In the first couple of trials, he tried with a paraprofessional as a home visitor, a social worker as a home visitor, and a nurse. And the best outcomes came from the nurse being the home visitor. So over the next 3 decades, he continued to test the program in 3 separate randomized controlled trials with 3 different populations. The trials were designed to study the effects of the NFP model on maternal health, and child development by comparing the short-term and long-term outcomes of the mothers and children in the program compared to those of the control group and of the mothers and children who were not in the program. And what is also very cool is that he is still following some of the parents and the families from the very first trials to see what outcomes they are still being able to achieve. So that's very cool. So the 2 programs that we have here at the health department are the parents as teachers. Lori Peters, she is the team leader for that one, and the Nurse Family Partnership, I am the team leader for that program. They're almost the same, but they're a little bit different curriculums. With Nurse Family Partnership, you do have to have a nurse as a home visitor. With parents as teachers here, there are nurses who are the home visitors as well. And I'll go into a little bit more. Our staff, so for parents as teachers, they have 3.5 nurse home visitors. And Nurse Family Partnership has 6 nurse home visitors. We also have the mental health coordinator, and I'll go on a little bit more on her as well in the next couple slides. For parents as teachers, they can take pregnant moms and postpartum mothers, and they usually like to take them before 6 weeks postpartum. And the other qualifications are usually low income. Usually if they qualify for WIC, they qualify for our program. Both of these programs are voluntary, and parents as teachers works with the family until the baby's 3. For Nurse Family Partnership, like I said, we are part of the multi-pilot, but the original program is for first-time mothers under 29 weeks pregnant, but we are in the multi-pilot, and we are able to take mothers anytime during the pregnancy. We cannot take postpartum clients, so usually they will go over to the parents as teachers program. Again, too, it's low income, so usually if they qualify for WIC, they qualify for us. This is a voluntary program as well, and we work with the baby until the baby is 2. Let's see, I think I said all of this. Yes, the difference between the 2 programs that work on here. The mental health coordinator, she is part-time, and she connects the clients with mental health services and needed resources. Sometimes she also follows a client more often or less often. It all depends on the client's needs. We usually do try to have her connect with each of the clients at least 1 time during their program. Our key goals are for improved pregnancy outcomes, improve child health and development, and improve economic self-sufficiency of the family. I made a handout that goes over all the different stats and all the different numbers like that are under like pregnancy outcomes like smoking, alcohol, prematurity, low birth weight, child health and development, all the numbers we have. And the statistics that I given were from July 2012 through March of 2019, so it was from the beginning of the Nurse Family Partnership Program. I didn't want to read off all those numbers for you. Okay. Our vision is to have a future where all children are healthy, families thrive, communities prosper, and the cycle of poverty is broken. So how it happens. NFP moms, usually they're referred to us from WIC. Like I said, that's the majority of where we get our referrals from. And the nurse meets with the client either in their house or anywhere in the community. We usually try to get into the home if we can to see what's really going on where they live. But they receive care information and advice from their nurses during pregnancy and early development, and they use the NFP's proven model of nursing care. Let's see, what else haven't I said on this? So in the next slide too, I'll go into, in the first few years of life, from 700 to 1,000 new neural connections are formed every second in the brain. So pregnancy outcomes are heavily influenced by prenatal care and mother's actions towards her babies in the first 1,000 days, from early pregnancy to the baby's second birthday. What happens in early childhood can matter for a lifetime. To successfully manage our society's future, we must recognize problems and address them before they get worse. In early childhood, research on the biology of stress shows how major adversity, such as like poverty, abuse, neglect, can all weaken the developing brain structure and permanently set the body's stress response on high alert. Science also shows that providing stable, responsive, nurturing relationships in the early years of life can help prevent and even sometimes reverse the damaging effects of early life stress, and then they can get the lifelong benefits for learning, behavior, and health. So this is a graph of the brain development involving sensory pathways, language, and higher cognitive function. And the gray area is when we, like as an NFP nurse home visitor, are in the home with the client and the baby. So we are there when it matters most, making sure that the vulnerable moms are able to get the support to become competent parents and everything that they might need, you know, during that specific time. So that's very important. So as a Nurse Family Partnership and also as parents, as teachers, we change the future for the most vulnerable babies born into poverty by equipping the best person for the job, the mom, and also the father and the family, to become competent, confident parents. And this program is aimed towards the mom, but anybody can be at the visits. Whoever the mom would like, if the father would like to be there, or a grandparent, or you know, a friend or somebody wants to be at the visits and learn all this educational stuff, they can as well. Let's see here. Currently there is over 280,000 families served in 41 states for NFP, and for every dollar invested in NFP, it saves $5.70 in future costs for the highest risk family served. Some of our referral sources, like I mentioned before, WIC is our main referral source. We do also get them sometimes from schools, the high schools. Some hospitals, usually the hospitals send over the high-risk ones. We're working to get in more with the OB offices in that. Sometimes we do get it from like KCHC and like a couple of referral sources. Our community partners, again, like I mentioned, WIC is definitely one of them. K-Life, the local schools in our area, Early Head Start, because we do often refer to them. Especially once our program ends at 2, then we will refer them to Early Head Start, and then from there they can go to Head Start before they start kindergarten. Some of the educational topics that we go over are prenatal care, preparing for baby safety, child development, and on the next slide too, I believe it's the next slide, I'll tell you some of the screening tools that we use to go over this. Reproductive life plan, education and employment, mental health, school readiness, positive parenting, self-efficacy. And it is the next slide. So here are some of the screening tools that we use. So the ASQs are to test the child development to make sure they're on the right track with their milestones for their age. Depression screening, and we do the EPDS and the PHQ-9. On the mothers, we do it before. We have a timeline of when we all do it, but we mainly do it before she has a baby and afterwards, so we have something to compare it to. We also do the generalized anxiety. That's one of the questionnaires. We do a perceived stress scale, and we also do the ACEs, which is the Adverse Childhood Experiences Survey. And so this is like what happened to you earlier in your life, you know. So that's what it kind of gives us an idea and sees where, and then if there's anything that are outliers, then we're able to you know, refer them or get them resources, whatever they may need, depending on these screenings that they do. So for Kenosha, these are just some of the stats I put down. From July 2012 through March 2019, 91% of babies born at a healthy weight, 90% of babies were born at full term, 85% of the mothers initiated breastfeeding, 96% of the babies received all immunizations by 24 months, and 67% of clients who were 18 years and older were employed at 24 months. I also kept this next slide in here from Colorado because that's where NFP originated, and our statistics are very similar, very close to their stats, so that made us happy. Our current CQI with our state funders is on safe sleep. We do many different activities every month to educate the moms, family members, dads, everybody or anybody who will listen on safe sleep and help them to encourage safe sleep. And this changes every month. We also have parent-led activity networks, so they're called planned events. And these are monthly events that we hold for our clients and our programs. This is for the clients to network and also be able to do a couple fun activities that they might not do elsewhere, like handprints that they can save for their babies and that, and it's just fun activities for them to come and do with their kids. Any questions? I try to go through quickly. Sorry if I was talking fast.
Thank you. Corporate counsel or health officer, any quick comments?
I do, just real brief. In April when we met, I had handed out recognition of our Word Health members, and I want to present Dr. Foster with his letter of recognition for appreciation of 17 years of service. So, thank you. I still have a couple more to do when they arrive. Two things. One, I just wanted to let you know our community health needs assessment is rolling out. We should start having the phone calls, the telephone survey in August. So you might get a phone call or you might hear within the community that those calls are going out. We'll then do the community interviews like we've done in the past. And then we'll also have a public service announcement that'll be going out. So our new community health strategic plan, our community health improvement plan will start next January in 2020. And second is, in May, we were doing a lot of measles disease preparation. So far, it just seems to be at our tailwind, but we have had mumps in our community. You might have seen it in the newspaper. We had two confirmed cases at the detention center, and we vaccinated staff and inmates, about 157. And the CDC, just kind of an FYI, is recommending a third dose of MMR. That's all I have.
All right, thank you. Corporate counsel?
No, nothing about.
All right. Well, then I will adjourn. Have a good day.
It's in my head, I don't see that.
like done by 12:30.
Yep.
A lot of work, I saw it. I assume they lose their email. Just kind of said. It does.
They have been. All right. I took all my notes from you guys.
Wearing that.
You know what that's like?
Yeah. But not that you're.
I'm going to clinic. I got clinic.
You have a handful of people.
You guys seem to have some robust information.
My neck was delivered on better.
Yeah. Maybe the book says it like, hey, let's need to go with this trip. Yeah, this time, joy. Need to relook it.
Thank you.
We can work out because I skipped a couple of slides because I thought we were short for time and the video didn't play out for years to get to the next.
Yeah, well, Nina set it up for me and on mine, it was playing on mine, so I just assumed.
Grab something to eat.
Yeah. We can send it out. Yeah, I have no, we got sound.